Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
Hello.
Hi.
So for those of you I don't know and don't know me, I am Tanya Woldridge. I'm the organized play coordinator. And my new friend. Yeah. And we are here to talk about organizing conventions. I think I've got a little bit of things to say, but a lot more questions to answer, and I want to hear what you guys need, and then I can give some advice to that. Because every convention is different, and every leadership team has, you know, a unique set of circumstances around it. And I've got jelly babies for people that need sugar, so that we can all stay awake and have fun. You know, I have planned conventions from five tables in the middle of North Bay in the cold north of Ontario down to the Sagamore at Gen Con and our 150 tables a slot. Actually, I think we're at 180 this year. It is our biggest convention. And there are some common issues that go amongst all of them. One of them is an organizational structure and a game plan that you need to set out well before you want to have this convention, down to on the site mayhem and madness and working with your facilities directors who may or may not know what this gaming thing is and all of the requirements that you have for it. So when I'm looking at a convention, especially when I'm going into a new venue, the first thing I want to do is I want to put together a game plan that says, these are my goals. This is what I think I'm going to need to achieve my goals. These are the people I'm going to need to contact to achieve my goals. And this is what I want to have happen on the other side. A lot of times that involves contacting the volunteer corps that works with Paizo, because that is whom is on the ground. They know their people best. They know their venues best. They know what people want to see there. You know, I would love to say I am an expert on all planning and all programming that we want to offer, but I will get into one area and they go, oh, we love core. Core is awesome. Let's plan loads of core. And then I'll get to the next one and they'll be like, wait, hey, core, why did you schedule this? I'm like, God. So really having someone in the area that you're planning for that knows your players and knows what they want will lead to a successful convention. Because if you give the players what they want, they will give you an easier time of it. So I kind of sit down and I say, you know, right now, I'll give the example. We're looking at PAX Unplugged. Who here has heard of it this year? Brand new. It's part of the PAX family. It's being held in Philadelphia. It is 100% role-playing and tabletop gaming. So PAX is famous for its video games and its high-octane, very larger-than-life. There was dinosaurs in the Washington State Convention Center last year that you could ride type programming, and now they want to take it down to a tabletop. And the poor programmer said, I don't know where to start. I'm used to video games that just say, oh, how much do you, you know, how much is this going to cost me? Oh, okay, a couple thousand dollars, no problem. Here, we're going to pay it, you make it happen. But tabletop role-playing games tend to be a different ball of wax. So they're coming into this foray, and the first thing they said was, what do you need? So you need to look at what your capabilities are and what you want to see happen, and that will drive what you need. If you know you have four GMs, you don't want to ask for 50 tables. It's not going to be a successful convention, and you're just going to get frustrated trying to beg, plead, and you know, bribe people to come out and run games for you. On the flip side, if you've got 50 GMs and a player base of a couple hundred, if I were to walk in here and say, oh, I'm going to offer five tables in the grand ballroom every slot, that wouldn't go over well either, because I'd have people slamming the doors going, where's my table? So you really need to set your expectations to what your players and your GMs are able to support. From there, you need to talk to the facility you want to use. Some facilities are awesome. Like here, they've given me a cell number, and I can text them, and they'll do anything that we, within reason, that we need from them. Some of them just don't want to work with you, and they want to jack, you know, we're going to charge you loads of money. Well, I can't afford that. Well, but, you know, or you get the places like New York City, Philadelphia, the big cities that you just can't find a venue at, but you want to have a convention. So that is another limiting factor that you really need to look at in your planning stage, is how you're going to make this one work. One of the things that we are changing, for those of you, some people have heard this spiel a couple of times, but I'll give the brief one. Paizo is no longer having its own volunteer corps. It is now working in conjunction with the Organized Play Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization that will house and hold all of the volunteers. What this means is that we now have access to schools. We now have access to community groups. We now have access to a larger set of venues because we can now say we're not for profit, which can help in the long run. It might also hurt us, but for the most part, I think people will say, yeah, that's a benefit.
When we are organizing, we're organizing groups and stuff, we say that we're not for profit and we're part of the organized play convention groupage. Does that change who we answer to?
No, I am still Paizo employee, but I am getting most of my time donated to the Organized Play Foundation. So it's not going to change any appreciable structure from the player side of it. It will change some structure on the back end of how we do it. For the Paizo-sponsored conventions, a lot of that means we now have to sign convention agreements with our volunteers. So we say, you know you're volunteering for us? And you say, yep, I know I'm volunteering for you. And we say, awesome, let's keep going. For our smaller ones, it gives just a venue and a machine of the Organized Play Foundation is an educational-based foundation. So a lot of times if you say we're here to teach all the things that role-playing games can teach, maths, reading, literacy, social interaction, science, mechanical engineering on how to drop a boulder from, yeah. So that, again, gives us a sense of what we can negotiate. And really, in planning a convention, it's all negotiation. You're going to negotiate with your venues, you're going to negotiate with your GMs, you're going to negotiate with your players. It's all a give and take. So from that aspect, having what I am calling the OPF, because Organization Play Foundation is a very long term, OPF will give that umbrella that you can use to negotiate to get into some of these venues. Once you're in the venue, a lot of it is just giving yourself more time than you think you need to get the tasks done, because there will always be some surprises that will crop up for you. From schedules going awry, or, I did the t-shirt order at 2 a.m. in the morning, and I found out that I didn't order the right sizes for all the people I needed, there's something that's going to goof up. So if you build in a little extra time in your schedule, if you say, I think the shortest amount of time you could plan a convention is about 3 months. And that leaves you with about 6 weeks of advertising time, which is a very small lead-in to it. But I think saying 3 months is the smallest time. To Gen Con, we start planning it 2 weeks after we finish the last show.
Now, is that also caveating the fact that Utah's convention time is right over? Starting at PaizoCon and ending with Gen Con is where high time for Utah conventions are, and we hate it.
That is high time for every convention season.
Why is that? One, and two, how do we account for the amount of time? Because Paizo, we love you guys,
yeah.
But you do shut down when Paizo comes around, two weeks before and about 2 weeks after.
A lot of it is, I don't know why it's been habitual, where you see this ramp up in conventions that starts about Memorial Day, and it goes huge through about Labor Day, and then all of a sudden it trickles off again. And I think the best thing is it's those months where you're out of school and you can take your kids and you can travel, and it's a holdover from RPGA days and even further back, where that's where people could travel.
Coming from outside U.S. experience, I'm from Australia.
Yeah.
So this time of year for us, conventions, not so much.
Yeah.
Hit September through to January, March, that's when they are.
Because you've got your flip season where, for us it's all cold.
And
yeah, exactly.
Like Christmas, we don't get a big middle of the year school holiday break. They just get 2 weeks. So that's when people take holidays over Christmas. So it makes a big difference.
Yeah, so if you look at the UK, it's pretty flat because they get all of their half-term and term holidays, so they go year-round school for the most part. So
are we still working under the assumption of the 3-week time period for turnarounds? Or, is I'm right in the middle of trying to plan for Salt Lake Gaming Con while I'm here mm-hmm. at the same time, and I'm ripping my hair out. And I don't know what Paizo's response is on the backside of it. I know you're ripping okay. your hair out because my emails are...
Actually, no. All right. First of all, let me caveat this. No one's emails are annoying. It may take me a little longer to get to them, but nobody's emails are annoying. Okay, so some expectations on if you want prize support and support from Paizo. I travel, and when I travel, I do not have access to certain computer systems I need in terms of giving GMs their scenarios. And I cannot make gift certificates in the way that I can when I'm plugged in at work. So both of these functions can be done by other people in the office, but I have to beg and ask and fit into their workload that's already substantial to get them to help me out.
Isn't that why we have regional coordinators and things like that?
They don't have access to these systems. They are proprietary systems that only Paizo can use.
It's because you don't want somebody with the power to print off unlimited gift cards.
Mm-hmm. So those are things that have to come out of Paizo Home Hub. The regionals can answer a lot of the questions that come up. That is what they're there for. They are experienced. They've been around since season zero, season one. So that is what I put them in for, was for all the questions that might come up. You know, I've got this venue and it doesn't want to work with me and it's only giving me 8 tables and I need 15. How do you negotiate that? That's questions that they can answer. Questions on, you know, how is the best method to schedule these things? That's where their experience comes in, and that's where they take the pressure off of me. But I have a team in the office. The whole Pathfinder Society team is there. But John and Linda, and now Thirsty, are production side. So they are making the scenarios. So again, if I divert any resources from that, those scenarios might not hit in time. So my backups are customer service. And as long as customer service are not swamped, I can get things out in a timely manner. So my plan is, since I'm, you know, for example, traveling the next 6 weeks to different conventions, is to sit down and put the emails together probably Mondays, since I'm in the airports on Mondays, and send those to customer service, and the customer service will be able to generate items, and I'll get them back. In an ideal world, I work 2 to 4 weeks ahead of time. I have yet to say no to any convention asking me support, even if they ask me the week before. It's, you know, but it means those GMs don't have the...
Because we've done.
Yeah. And really it becomes down to the scenarios can be dropped into GM accounts at any point in time. In the longer time you give, the more time they have to prep. So if you have a con in August that you already know what your GM lineup is going to be, submit that GM lineup now. I'll put it to customer service. As soon as they have time, they'll drop them in and they'll get their scenarios. And even if it's for future ones being released... We'll put them in their accounts, and the minute that they get uploaded to the system, they drop out. So PaizoCon GMs got their scenarios 3 weeks ago because I put them in 5 weeks ago. So the biggest thing for lead times is that way we know we can hit those deadlines and we can give the GMs the times they need. We can work on a shorter one. It just makes it a little bit harder to coordinate all the pieces. So, you know, Paizo is still, even with the creation of OPF, we are still doing the same support that we've always done. So we will support, our minimum table count for a convention support is 15 tables. We feel that this is 15 tables over up to 3 days. So you can do 15 tables in a day. You can do 15 tables over 3 days and do 5 each day. But we feel this is kind of that guideline where it gets to be big enough that it actually can take the time and the effort to do it.
15 tables scheduled or 15 tables firing?
It is 15 tables scheduled. Now, I have compiled all the data from 2016, and when people request things for 2017, I go back and look at the 2016 data, and I see if an after-action report was filed, and I see what the tier wound up being. And that way I can look and say, oh, you want tier 1 support, but you only fired 15 tables, we're going to give you a tier 3 this year and see what happens. Because we also realize that sometimes you have great plans, and the weather, the attendees, the venue, something messes up and goofs up. And we don't want to penalize organizers for not having, you know, you can't control the weather. And when that blizzard comes in and the planes are canceled, their Delta system goes down, you're kind of subject to what they need.
That's right. Yeah. So when filling out the latest after-action report, mm-hmm. I recall seeing the quests were treated differently
Do those count as the 15 table requirement quests?
We look at it in approximately a 4 to 5 hour block is one table. So, and I've actually tried to get away from tables to use the word block. And if you look at the new convention support request form that's out there for Paizo, it has on the very bottom of it what each of these translates to. So 4 hours of quests equal a block of what you need to run, and you need 15 blocks.
I would like a copy of that, please.
It is the most recent one linked off of the forms, and I will get them. I'm trying to get those forms put up in a public-facing place, so not only can the venture officer organizers find them, but con organizers that are not venture officers can also have access to them.
Because you've seen using the one from 3 years ago.
Yeah. But this one breaks it down. So modules, if you're a 16-page module, you count as one block. If you're a 32-page module, you count as two blocks. Because the longer the module is, the longer it takes to run. You know, APs also count in there. One of the things we try not to do with our conventions is use adventure paths, primarily for the reason that it does not give a full story if you're taking the adventure path ad hoc. And so we want to give you content to play, but we feel adventure paths are more in line with home games or certain venues. Or if you had a week and you wanted to schedule a different AP volume every night, you know, and call that, you know, MegaCon or you know, Wrath of the Righteous Con, you can do that. But that is why the APs are not weighted quite as well as the modules and the scenarios, because modules and scenarios are smaller chunks that are designed for a convention-style play.
We, and I'm not sure if anybody else has run into this problem or if there's been talk about it, we get tacked onto larger things.
Okay.
Like some people have a tabletop gaming room at a convention, mm-hmm. and we just kind of get tacked in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the plan and everything is kind of out of our hands.
Yep.
So, but what we get is walkthroughs, mm-hmm. not sit down at the tables. So what I'm trying to figure out is what would be, is there a way that I can run something that's more promotional rather than to do?
Now that I've gotten Pathfinder Society Academy safely to Linda, and she's shepherding that baby, we are looking at what we are calling recruitment cons. These events like the PAXs, where you get a high volume of people that just want to come in and taste what we offer as organized play. And so that is something that we're actually looking at what the support would be, because you hand them boons and they go, great, I can make airplanes, kind of like the kids. You hand them some swag and they go, I don't really know what to do with this. But they can benefit from the novels, they can benefit from the comics, they can benefit from, you know, gift certificates, maybe, maybe not, if we can convert them on site. But it's a kind of possibility. So we are actually looking at that specific convention.
Because I've been having trouble getting, for us, the big draw for GMs is if they do 8 hours of volunteer mm-hmm. work, they get a free ticket.
Okay.
We got roped into Comic-Con.
We got roped into Comic-Con this year, and it's... and I literally... we got four tables.
Yeah.
Over 2 days. Okay. That was it.
So one of the things I say that those GMs that show up to support those events should still be getting the race boon. If they show out, they should still be getting it.
Because I got roped into being the secondary organizer mm-hmm. because the primary organizer actually works for the people who do the comedy.
Okay, and that you will find that. That is pretty common.
I'd like to talk to you after about that.
All right, that's no problem. We can take this specific one off. But to speak to that issue, the Comic Cons, the PAXs, the things like that, we are trying to push. The quests are really good for that.
Yes.
The demo card game sets, and I have extra demo sets here this week. They are for all of our sets. I have the Wrath of the Righteous, I have the Skull and Shackles, I have Rise of the Rune Lords, I believe, demo set, and now Mummy's Mask. And I will be keeping a reserve of what I need to run the shows, but after that, I am more than happy to share those out with organizers that could use them, because they are all color-coded. They are also available, I believe, from Drive-Thru RPG.
Yes.
Because
only the So only, I believe Vic gave us the link to the Wrath of the Righteous one, but I don't know of any other sets that are on drive-thru.
I will find out where they're at, because those are things that should be available to organizers
to
use.
I know the Wrath of the Righteous is there, and
yep.
I've used it a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get the PCG off the ground.
Yep.
We have a gentleman who's very interested in running that, but it just, we can't get any players that want to.
Yeah, exactly. I find, again, that when I say it's only 30 minutes, would you like to try, I get more people willing to, oh, okay, I can give you 30 minutes in between where I'm running to. But that is one of our focuses that we're trying to look on, is how to build these exhibition-style shows for recruitment, and then take those and flip them to become permanent players. So, yeah, watch more for that information coming out in a blog post.
Just about the
yep.
quests and ways... we use a whiteboard at our conventions, and
mm-hmm.
we put, I think the phrases new games every hour and drop-in gaming
mm-hmm.
are very attractive to people who
yep.
are just milling about.
Exactly, yeah. Because when they think that they can come in and get
learn
in.
Learn to play.
Yep. Yep, learn to play is a good
my
one.
My new schedule for this convention is
yep.
Almost live.
So you kind of made a reference to that. And that is what happens when you have an organizer that's sitting above you and you're just getting tables at it. And especially when they don't understand maybe how we do things or the four-hour blocks or something like that. The best thing I have found is we have some demo games up on YouTube now. We have some that are the staffers, and we have some that are just other people playing. And I will take my phone in with a demo game, and I'll say, this is what we do. And then I will write up a schedule and say, this is what I need. Here's one that's based on exhibitions, and here's one based on full scenarios. Which of these two time frames fit for you? And then they'll normally say, okay, well, we would like this or we'd like that. And then you know which prong to go through on how you're planning. Sometimes they'll just say, no, you have to comply to our time structure. And to that, I say, make your best guess what will fit in there based on the people you know that are coming and what their interests are. If you need to truncate games to make them fit in a four-hour slot, because that's what RPGA used to use, and that's what some events still hold to.
If you're lucky,
you can
go to a local convention
yep.
that they go 3-hour slot.
Mm-hmm.
End of discussion.
Yep. School spirits all day.
Yeah, a lot of players were charged, basically being charged for two slots worth for one game.
Yeah.
And it just got cost prohibitive for players. They just didn't
yep.
come.
One of the things, and I have found this one to work, though I hesitate to use it unless I have to, is a great, we will not show up at your show this year.
Yeah.
You may explain to the players why there is no society at your show. They don't like that answer.
I did that this year.
Yep, the players don't like the answer.
Unfortunately, our hands are tied on that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that ties back
yep.
into our discussion.
But I mean, you have, and I will never fault you for sending in a support request early and then coming back and sending me the message that says, nope, pulled out, just couldn't make the venue work, because I can cancel that and we can just put a line through it and not go forward anytime we need to.
So, with conventions,
mm-hmm.
it's often if you're your own pathfinder conventions.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah.
If you're part of a gaming thing, though, it's really a recruitment thing, because it's, unless you don't have a lot of games going on locally,
mm-hmm.
people aren't going to pay $40 a day or $10 a day or whatever
yep.
to play the same game that they could play
yep.
the next day at the store. So the approach of that kind of sort of marketing is essentially a different thing. Is there a system in place to help people promote to those sort of different venues rather than just trying to run, I mean, we broke off, we run our own convention so that
mm-hmm.
we can set time slots and stuff like that,
yep.
we can do the tables.
Yep.
But it's the same people that just come up, right? So it's not bringing new people necessarily,
yep.
whereas the bigger cons have the opportunity for that crossover.
A lot of it becomes what you can negotiate with the venue and what you... It means talking to all the, getting all the organizers together and having the conversation. We have the con exclusives in that some of the special events can't be run at smaller venues. So that's always a draw, and a market piece is you can come play a 30 table interactive where you can't in the store. You also I have seen regions use it well where they say, we're not going to, you know, we need these two scenarios for this convention. You can have the rest of them for your store, but we need these two. And that really does come down to the local set of organizers getting together. We can give you rough numbers of what's going to come out in a year today. I can tell you that season 9 will have approximately 21 scenarios. It will have two special events. It will have one of those being the big Gen Con exclusive, and one that's normally the PaizoCon Con exclusive. So if you know these pieces, you can kind of look at it and say, we've got conventions this month and this month. These scenarios need to be kept out of the stores. Well, we'll give you 10 months of store scenarios, and then you can try and sell it that way. There are regions that just don't need conventions,
right.
And that's okay. And in those cases, if you have an organizer that thinks, you know, yes, let me sit back. In the venture officer duties, it does say you need to run one convention or you need to run two. I have talked to the RVCs, and we are ready to waiver that depending on the regions and depending on what the individual places say. The purpose of that being included, along with the you need to run a game or two games a month, is to make sure that these volunteers stay active in their regions and they're not just sitting at home playing a home game, hold on one second, and collecting the benefits of that, because that doesn't do Paizo any benefit because we're not out there. But, you know, the Australian conventions that you just need to walk out of for a year, okay. In England, getting a store with more than 3 tables in it is miraculous. They need their convention season because that's the only place they can play. Montana, where you've got 10 players in a statewide thing, you know, and they're all like, oh, are we driving to Missoula, Kalispell, or Helena this weekend? Why don't we all sit online? Because then we don't have to drive. Okay, sit online. So this is where talking to the regionals is the big key. Telling them what you have, what you're able to do, and coming up with a game plan to keep PFS vibrant in your area is far more important to me than worrying about what piece you're fitting in there. So I don't know if that helps somebody. I saw a lot of nods and a sigh of relief. I hesitate to take any of it out of the overarching pieces, because the minute I do, then those people that do sit there and say, I just want to run for my home game, now I don't have anything to say you can't, you need to. It's the same as you need to attend a Paizo convention every year. I'd love to see you all. I enjoy the dinners where I get to meet people. I like being able to put faces to names and go, oh, you're the person that's been emailing me. Really good to know you. But, you know, I had someone write and say, I can have a roof or I can travel to a convention. And I said, please put a roof on your house. I don't want to be responsible for flooding out your family. You know, this is a hobby. And that, I think, is the other key thing to remember, is from planning conventions to running in stores, if you're not enjoying it anymore, your players will know that. And if your players know that, they will go find something else to do that is more enjoyable. So really, at the end of the day, I want you guys to be happy as organizers, and that makes my job easier, because then you're happy, your players are happy, and you know, we can all just kick back and roll some dice. So, yeah.
What is the marketing aspect from doing conventions, let's say like a Comic-Con? If we could get a hold of booth merch,
mm-hmm.
so that we could peddle ISO wares at these conventions, is there anything in the plan for that? Because quite honestly, I would love to get a box from you that says care package to Tony, sell our merch.
Mm-hmm.
I sell your merch. I box up the check, mail it back off to Paizo. I don't see a dime of it. I'm happy with that, with whatever merch is left over.
Yep.
Can we do something like that? Is that possible? Because honestly, going to Comic-Con, we stand there with our poster and we stand there, we go, we're gaming! And they're all, no, we're not.
Yeah. Unfortunately, no, because the minute that you sell our merch, you cross from being a volunteer for planning games into realms that we are not willing to go into. We have looked multiple times at sending strategic groups out to have a booth presence, but as you made the comment, you know, Paizo closes down the 2 weeks before PaizoCon and the 2 weeks after to recuperate. Taking a booth somewhere is a massive influx of staff, of resources, and it's just not somewhere we're ready to go yet.
Is there any way that we can license out one of our local stores to do that?
Normally what I will do is I will go to a local store and say, we're going to be there playing these games. Would you like to stock more product? And they can go to their distributors and say, okay, we've got the this is the coordination piece of it. I will go in and I'll say to Uncle's Games, is one of the big ones here in Seattle, and I'll say, we are going to be at these 7 conventions this year. And they go, great, what are you running? And I say, we're running ACG. And they go, cool, we will put more boxes of that on the truck. Or here's our new hardback, and it's coming out in this week. And so they'll say, great, we're going to stock an extra 6 hardbacks. The retail program that came out this year,
right,
is another one of those you can normally convince
fantastic.
More stores. Oh, cool. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes. However, when you're working with a convention center, mm-hmm, and stores come to the convention center and set, mm-hmm, up booths, is there any way that we could, is that a regional thing? Should we be able to go through Paizo to license extra product for us? Or is that just something we got to work out on our own?
That is up to the store to talk to their distributors. And that is really, we can't get involved in that piece of it, the sales piece of it. I just normally give all my stores a heads up that these are the conventions we're going to be at.
I do have a quick question. As for, say, marketing, is there any way we could do a community use package that's posters that say, come play Pathfinder here? Big,
yep,
bold letters, this is not for sale, blah, 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 yep, whatever we need. But I struggle to find,
yeah,
posters.
Some of you have heard of the wall of cards. When I took the job, I went in and wrote every task that the PFS team needed to do on a bunch of color-coded cards and stuck them up on the wall behind the door, to the point that I made several coworkers threaten to stress vomit because there were so many cards on the wall. and we have been slowly whittling those cards down as you see new FAQ and new campaign clarifications and new additional resources come up. And one of those cards says a marketing packet. And it actually got put off of my desk because I am not marketing, and over onto Jenny Bendel and Eric Mona's desk. And I walked into his office the other day, and he has 2 cards sitting on his wall, and one of them is the marketing packet, and there was a second one that I handed over to him that said, this is, it wasn't posters, but it was another one. I'm like, these are the 2 cards I need you to help me with for OP. So it is in the works. The idea is that there will be a graphic that would be a standee-size graphic, there would be a poster-size graphic, there would be a sticky cling-size graphic that could be printed out from the stores, and they could use them.
That being said, we've in Utah been doing our own, and we've been pulling a lot of the open license stuff, and,
mm-hmm,
we've been putting a little,
mm-hmm, yep,
this blurb,
yep,
at the bottom, and we've got our full size,
yep,
standees. Reimbursement for these things, is it possible?
That, unfortunately, I don't think there is. That is the, it lumps into the, I can reimburse the conventions, but I can't reimburse certain things. Stores, they live in their own unique piece. We can provide them stuff, but it is their store.
Well,
we as
your volunteers,
yeah,
are building this stuff because the stores aren't helping us.
Right. And unfortunately, there is a very fine line of what I can and cannot do there that, again, crosses that line between volunteer and,
yeah,
us running the program. So we can make them available. I know there are community-created designs out there that a lot of people have put together, and as long as it's community use, open license, which the, you know, we're going to make the season 9 packet here real soon once we talk at the banquet, and you'll start seeing that available to put on it. I ask that no one goes out and breaks themselves on the expense. We are trying to find a way. Shipping was prohibitive. When I came in and took over and looked at what we were spending on shipping to get con support out to the conventions, it was more than, in cases, sometimes the con support itself. The story was the Australia shipment that cost $800.
Sorry.
Plus, they have to pay customs on it once it hits there.
Yeah,
so it was all of our foreign partners.
So this is why we are receiving gift cards.
This is why we went to the gift certificates. No. Because I could up the amount of credit.
Are
for
we
them.
Allowed... Are we allowed, and this is something that I've been kicking around with,
mm-hmm,
the Utah group, and we heard an overwhelming yes, we want.
Mm-hmm.
is there any way that we as VCs, venture officers, or anything else can have access to these Paizo exclusives via gift card so that we can put them on our con tables? Because this is what they're screaming for.
The problem with this is, and we have yet to come up with a solution, and if people have ideas, I am open to them, on if I send the gift certificates out and you guys use them to purchase things to put on a con table, I do not want to say that the majority would spend them on personal items, but I do know some cases already where they do. And there's no way I have figured out to balance that piece of it. Is this going to the conventions? Because if I could just generate a store credit for X amount to the organizer and then let the organizer pick the swag they want, that seems like a middle ground. But again, we've got to make sure that these things are being... I can look at the gift certificates and have and see who turns them in and kind of do audits of them.
Because the way we've been doing it in Utah is we give out the gift certificates.
Mm-hmm.
We also, with the convention money that we bring in, we purchase store gift cards to support the store. And then we also spend our own money to buy merch from the scratch and dent sale, throw that on the tables as well. And we've had some very successful conventions, but we're also not seeing the Paizo exclusives.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they're Paizo exclusives that I don't think we have an intention to be able to release to other places.
Is it if you do not intend to release Paizo exclusives like via a gift certificate, that Mike suggested is probably not going to help. But like having a certificate for a specific item,
that is a capability we are investigating now that we have the gift certificate capability. But again, it's not been something that's rolled out company-wide yet.
Actually, we have an answer for that. We have actually printed our own gift certificates, and then we would pre-order something for somebody, and then put the gift certificate on the table, and say, this has been pre-ordered, whoever wins this via die roll or whatever, and then they come to the VC, and then we give them that.
A lot of it, I mean... We have a tech team that just lost a couple of members that we're working on replacing. We lost a couple of members when I first got hired. So it's getting a stable enough team to be able to move some of these pieces forward on that.
I do not envy you.
So to piggyback off the marketing conversation and the materials that are coming together, you mentioned that you lost some time before the convention to advertise and get the word out.
Yep.
I'm sure that it depends on the convention that you're organizing as to what's effective, but are there relatively universal methods that...
I normally ask the convention to put the Pathfinder Society logo somewhere on their website, because most conventions that we... If you plan it, you'll have whatever site you are. If they plan it, most of them are amiable to putting a PFS logo. Probably not the Paizo logo. That's the one where they want us to pay for it before they'll put it on it. But the PFS, especially if you start talking about being nonprofit and Organized Play Foundation, you'll be able to get that one on there.
And they would have to go to the community use site and do that work for themselves.
Yep.
We can't, like, here's the logo.
You are more than welcome to send them the logo.
Okay.
And just send them the little OGL blurb that goes with it.
Okay.
This goes on the top, this goes on the bottom of your website, plug and play and done. There is nothing watermarked or protected on those community use files that you cannot send them back and forth. I normally try and do a mass media Facebook and Twitter blurb with whatever my Warhorn is, or whatever meetup, wherever the convention's doing. Some of the conventions have their own... login systems, like Origins has an entire system that you have to log in through theirs. But whatever you're using to register your tables, I start sending it out at about 6 weeks. I'll say, hey, this is coming. If you send me your convention support request early, I am putting 6 weeks of conventions on a blog on the first of the month. We started doing that 2 months ago, and it really went over well. I was doing 1 month, and people said, well, what happens for that first week when you're catching up to the next blog? And I said, okay, I'll do 6 weeks. So as long as the list, you know, in the summer it's going to be the list, in the winter it's going to be the list, but I think that also says anyone that's coming and looking at our blogs will see, oh, hey, I'm in this, you know, this location at this weekend. I was trying to tweet them all. I am not a Twitter person. I have found my age. I am not socially media as savvy as I could be. That's why we hired Dan.
Just back to the opening list and stuff. As part of our handout stuff, give me players, give people things. I like to do the different business cards. And the way I've designed them is it's Pathfinder Society, Society for Stuff. But then I use one of the characters, it doesn't really matter which one. But with the cards, it's not enough space to put the opening license statement on it. And so what I've done is put image is Paizo's. Logo is Paizo's. And so that's the best I could do with the space I had.
I will also, if you were to take a tabletop and put it right behind the stack of cards that said, you know, put the logo on it, and then this logo is being used as part of the open, and put it on the bottom of a table tent. That gets it out there without doing it. Same with the standees. I'll take a piece of paper, and I'll put the OGL on it, and I'll stick it to the side or the back of the standee so that you're not messing up the beautiful graphic that's on the front, but it is still there present on the item that you're creating. It doesn't need to be big. It doesn't need to be fancy. It just needs to be there somewhere. The only reason we say that it needs to be on everything is because the minute that we do not ask it to be on everything, we lose control of our IP. So that's the problem.
It's just I've already made like 600. Yes.
No, just throw something very small.
Stand?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Just somewhere on the stand that's around it that people could see it if they know. And the question is, that way they don't take it and put it on something else without knowing that it exists.
We get roped into Comic-Con and Anime-Con. How do we cross that over? We have a healthy number of cosplayers in Utah, but none of them want to dress up as other characters.
Yep. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I'm playing with it with PAX every year. Because we go to PAX, we funnel hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people through it, and we see three of them in the local stores. And it's a question. One of the things we've talked about doing, they have brochures for Northwest Pathfinder Society that sit there on the table, the Vistaprint cards that sit there on the table. Hey, did you have fun? And we'll see people back 3 years in a row, and we're like, we recognize you because you're distinctive. And they're like, yeah. And we're like, why don't you come out to store? Well, I just don't want it. Or I don't have time. Or I don't have this or that. So
the answer
it is,
we get is, you know, we just don't want to play.
Yeah.
And it's...
You know, and
well, if they don't want to play, then there's nothing.
Well, no, but
and the answer is sometimes getting roped into a con once to suss it out and do some strategic checking out is not bad. If they ask you to come back the second time, you can negotiate and say, "Well, this really isn't our venue. What are you willing to give me to have me here?" And you know, if it's not going to get you players, don't be there. Don't spend the time and the emotional capacity on something that's not going
to
convert.
So we are within our right to tell them, no, we appreciate the offer to go to AnimeCon. We just don't belong there. It's not for us.
Yep. Anyone has any right to walk away from any convention.
Because, I mean, we can fill tables with people that want to play for half an hour to an hour because they're bored.
They don't want to be part of it.
We're not generating society.
And to me, I would rather have you acknowledge it, say it to them, and walk away from it, and use your efforts at a convention that are going to be more beneficial, than bang your head up against the wall, and 3 years later, just be like, we're showing nothing for all of this expenditure of effort, you know? Yeah.
So I find that this is specific to the card game, that I can get people interested in the card game. Mm-hmm. And I can get people interested in buying a box and playing at home.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot more trouble in getting people to play Society.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is because they don't actually understand the difference between Society and a home game.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very significant differences between the two.
Yeah.
Do we have resources to actually explain? So like if I go and blast to like the Seattle War Gamers group, for example, if I show them a video of stuff being played, I know my market. Mm-hmm. I know that my region has people who are like very interested in different types of board games. If they see something being played and they understand what that's about, they can then actually decide whether or not they want to play it because the market is... Like, I find my local market to be very sad in that sense. But... I need to know how to explain it with a, with probably a video or something like that.
We had a task force that was working on them, and that kind of died, and it is still something on my radar I wouldn't mind picking up. My best explanation is it's an entire another set of content for your game. And, you know, ACG is not cheap to get into. It is a cash investment to get the box and all the decks that go with it. So when you tell them that for just a little more, or in some cases, if they're a volunteer, you know, you're going to get this entire new set of stories, people start perking up, and, you know, because they always like, ooh, value added. I have been trying to get, in specifically for the ACG, trying to get people to just play a second bout. Because we find that even if they report it, I love it. It's awesome. But if they won't report, but they'll still play it, we're still seeing that convert and keep people playing, which means they come back and look for a deck, which means that it has follow-on effects to it. So I am less stressed about home games that will just use the society scenarios to play another set of home games than I am converting them necessarily into full guild members. It comes. It just takes a little while to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. Like, basically, my usual sales pitch during demo, like their demo season, is here's a set of scenarios for just a little, like, just for like $1 a scenario, you can buy a second adventure pack.
Yeah, exactly.
For $1 a scenario, you two can feed Paizo member.
You two can keep me in a job. But I mean, when you sit there and say you've already spent $20 on this deck, $5 more, and you can play a whole nother set with it. Not to give too much away on the before the banquet, but we are looking at the base sets that we have and how to make them turn into new seasons of Card Guild. You know, John and I and Vic and the team have sat down and said, we've got potentially 3 or 4 more seasons already in the back of our heads on how to get things going. So, you know, we're trying to make that be more visible, and the more visible we make it, the more people want to play it.
Mm-hmm. What's killing us, and again, this is for conventions, because we try to at least have the ACG on hand for the conventions, because it's quick, it's easy to play, it's fast, and you can get more walk-in drop-ins. The thing that's inhibiting most players is you cannot create more characters with less than one. You cannot carry more than one character with one character deck of cards. So in order to create 15 rogues, I would need 15 character decks of rogue.
That is not true.
No.
You take the paper, all of the downloaded character sheets, and the minute that you mark down the cards you have in that character, you can shove everything back together and make a different style rogue.
Okay, because the way that it's written in the ACG guild guide, that deck is exclusive to those characters. And so the way it's been translated is that you have to have a deck per character.
I will take a look at that and work with Vic to clean up the language on that one. But the answer should be that you should always be able to drop to a character sheet, one of the ones that has all the card lists on it. You should be able to mark down your character, put that with your chronicle sheet, and then recreate another one. So I will take one barbarian deck with me and be able to play Brielle, and then turn around and say, I want to try something else for the next one and create one of the other ones. Just because, that one, that sheet there.
Right, I've seen the character sheets, and we've used them. It's just...
So you don't have to be, you do not have to lock in to that deck. So that will give a little more flexibility as well. But unfortunately, one person still can only play one deck at a time.
Right.
Type thing. We probably have time for another 2 or 3 questions before they're going to kick me out of the room. Steve?
Just to comment, in Australia we are a much smaller place. One thing I've found that helps with repeat convention attendees, traveling is not as easy or cheap in Australia. Final session of every single convention, I turn around and say to everybody, this is the next convention, this is the date, it might be 3 months, it might be 6 months, it might be whatever, and I will offer something there special. For example, at PaizoCon I was last year, I had a bunch of people who traveled in, I knew they had level 10 characters. We had a convention scheduled 4 months later, I said, I'm going to offer eyes. You come, I will give you GMs. They came. They said, we're coming back to see the content. If you can work out where people are and get
offer them that they can travel to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they're doing a 5-hour drive.
Yeah.
Our problem with the conventions isn't our current base, it's recruiting new base.
Yeah.
That's our problem.
And it really becomes a game of word of mouth, and it really becomes a look at what the diminishing returns. What is going to get you the most bang for your buck? Spend the effort there and walk away from everything else. And as volunteers in your regions, you have the ultimate authority, the ultimate knowledge, and the ultimate capability and trust from us down to do what your region needs. So we really do want to put that in your guys' hands.
Have you looked into the Adventures League's con-specific content that they put together?
We have. And the extra mega con and things like that. Part of the issue is, we've talked about it several times on, did we want to relax production standards to be able to produce more content? And every time we look at it, the feedback that we get is that Paizo's production standards are high, that they like the fact that the season has staffers touching all of the pieces of it, and that, again, it's that diminishing returns. If we were to release it out, we don't think it would serve our player base as well. So we have made that conscious decision every time we look at it to say, no, we're going to keep it in-house, we're going to keep it developed, we're going to keep the writers we have. But that does mean that we don't have as much con-specific, because as far as I understand, they are able to, people can write for it, just flat out write for it, but there's no quality control and there's no knowledge of what's going to be in it. And I do a lot of cross-aisle con sharing with that crew, because, to be honest, we're all gamers. It's all flavors of ice cream. And I would rather work with everyone so that we can have chocolate in the morning and strawberry in the afternoon and vanilla in the evening and everyone gets to have fun than worry about, this is our pot of players, this is your pot of players, this is your pot of players. So we've had cases where at Hoosier Con, they kicked the AL players out of their room. They had 5 tables, we had 15. They kicked them out of the room so they could have the indie games there the last day. And we said, you can come have 5 tables in our room. Why? Because ultimately we're pulling from the same player base. And the more cooperation we can make, you'll get those players converted over.
Thankfully, the Adventure League has been really, really helpful to those of us in Utah. And, we love those guys. Yep. They come and they play with us every couple of Thursdays. We have the guys in charge of that come down.
So definitely don't feel like it has to be an us versus them mentality. It can be an us and them mentality. I was laughing one day and said we should have one of these games where you guys run in your rules and we run in our rules and we're just going to all mash together with a common storyline.
That would be fun.
You know, so it's a pipe dream. Maybe I'll get there. Maybe that one will come off. But to me, really, in the end, and the rule, my rule of thumb is, let's make it fun. Let's make it fun. Convention's fun for the attendees. Let's make it fun for the GMs. Let's make it fun for the players. I highly encourage you, if you have questions on specific organization, to reach out to your RVCs. For those of you, if you're not in the venture officer pool yet, but would like some help organizing something in your area, send me a message at Paizo, and I will make sure it gets to someone that can help you, because you do not have to be a venture officer to get resources and help from us. That is
We've tried to explain that to our much more southern Utah folks as mm-hmm. well. And
no, they seem to think that you need to have
they're
officer or something. So
the overwhelming response that we've been getting, and I would love to try and correct this also, is that they feel like they're not entitled to talk to you or anybody here at Paizo because you all live on high.
No. No, my ivory tower lost its steps long ago. So I am on the contact page if you need to find me on the paizo.com contact page, and send us messages. We like to talk to people. So thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for having
me. I have some products.
Yeah, products. Awesome. Let's go get you in a room to count products.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.